This is a Carlisle ValueCast, brought to you by the Carlisle Group. ValueCast brings you insights from our One Carlisle Network, providing analysis, data, and observations to help you navigate the global economy and top-of-mind issues in news. The Carlisle Group. Invest wisely. Create value.
Greetings and welcome to Carlisle ValueCast. I'm Chris Ullman, head of Carlisle's Global Communications. Today we're joined by Mark Arpey, who's head of Carlisle's Investor Relations. Welcome, Mike.
Hi, Chris.
Mike, you run a global team that focuses on investor relations. Can you tell us about the team and how it operates?
First, Chris, to avoid confusion, Carlisle has two types of investors. It has public unit investors, and it has limited partners in our funds. My responsibility is to service the limited partners in our funds. Our responsibility in servicing that large number of investors is to take a consultative approach to investor relations. We're meeting with those investors, understanding what their needs are, and we're sharing with them skills that Carlisle has that can help complement their portfolios over time. We also want to make sure that those investors who have invested in our prior funds receive the best information available about the underlying investments that we've made to them and that we're answering any questions that they might have on those existing investments from time to time.
Mike, what are the big trends you're seeing among investors these days?
There are five big trends. Trend one is increasing exposure to alternative investments. The second is looking for ways to increase current yield in one's portfolio. The third is how do investors better diversify their portfolios through uncorrelated investments. The fourth is J-curve mitigation. And how do they truncate the J-curve and wind up getting returns back into their portfolio more quickly? And then finally, the fifth is reducing costs.
Can you give us a little synopsis of each of those five?
Investors are looking to increase what had traditionally been maybe only a 5% exposure to alternative investments, sometimes to a 10, 15, and 20% exposure to alternative investments in their context of their overall portfolio. They're doing that because their public market returns have not gotten them good matching against the liabilities that they might have in their portfolios. The second is to increase current yield in their portfolio. The reason for that is that public market fixed income has not provided them with the kind of returns that they have traditionally gotten. So they're looking to manage their beta in a more appropriate way in their portfolio, and private credit allows them to do that. The third is getting uncorrelated returns. Prior to the global financial crisis, investors thought that their portfolio was more diversified than it actually wound up being. Investors took the point of view post the crisis that investing in things like real assets and infrastructure allowed them to have a more broadly diversified and uncorrelated portfolio than they might have had. The fourth is J-curve mitigation. Investors are looking to get immediate exposure into the alternative asset class. They're looking to do that because they need those returns now. Investing into the life cycle of an existing partnership allows them to get returns back more quickly. And finally, Chris, reducing costs. All investors are in a period of time where net returns are what they're very much focused on, and that scrutiny is coming from their ultimate fiduciary, their boards, and or their own bottom line. They're looking for ways in which to reduce the overall costs, and one of the ways that they're doing that is through looking to gain more leverage by economies of scale, by putting more money to work with fewer parties. And they're also looking to decrease their costs through promote-free co-investment.
LPs, especially big ones, are looking to reduce the number of GP relationships they have. Why do some LPs have many GP relationships to begin with, and how are they going about paring them back?
Oftentimes, the duration of investment in a pension fund or any institutional investor outstrips the life of the individuals that are responsible for putting the money to work. Different portfolio managers, different consultants will step into shoes that are created when people leave. They will have a different point of view or different strategy than their predecessors. As a consequence of that, they may take the portfolio in a different place, and that will cause them to add relationships. Oftentimes, institutional investors, while they could prune their portfolio through selling secondaries, choose not to do that for a variety of reasons. They take the view that it may not be worth the discount associated with the secondary sale. There's a certain labor intensity and scrutiny associated with that that they may not wish to partake in. Then over time, after many successions of people, you could end up in a circumstance where you have literally hundreds of GP relationships, which become increasingly difficult for limited partners and their consultants to manage. LPs are beginning to recognize this trend and looking to concentrate their exposures with those managers to generate economies of scale, drive better economics, more co-investment opportunities, et cetera.
The Institutional Limited Partners Association, known as ILPA, has a reporting template that Carlyle and a number of other major GPs have adopted. Why did that come about, and how's it going so far?
With the increased scrutiny associated with all public plans and all major investors came the need for greater transparency. Boards wanted to understand more, fiduciaries wanted to understand more what the real value proposition was that they were receiving from alternative investments. Because again, you know, if one looks at the J curve and you just look at the absolute fees that are paid, those numbers can look substantial. What you want to really understand is, are you getting the real value proposition of those fees? Do the net returns justify what you're paying out ultimately in fees? And the only way to understand that is to have true disclosure around how much money you're paying, how much you're getting back, and what that means to your portfolio. In a post-Madoff world, where there has been a lot of concern about whether or not their GPs are acting in an ethical and honest way, the templates allow limited partners to have greater comfort around what is exactly going on with their general partners. What are they doing? They can do that on a periodic basis through the templates.
We're hearing the term managed accounts a lot these days. What does that mean?
So managed accounts, Chris, are customized relationships that large investors tend to structure with general partners that can involve multiple strategies that those general partners offer to a limited partner. They can involve making fund commitments and co-investment commitments to that general partner. Investors are looking to get particular portfolio needs met through that structured relationship with the general partner.
Is this something Carlyle's doing?
We do it on a very limited basis with investors, but we want to make sure that it fits with our existing obligations to limited partners in our funds and to make sure that it is without conflict.
Is there any kind of trend that's emerging that you think will continue to get traction in, say, the next 3 to 5 years or so?
I think there are three big trends. Trend one is that limited partners are looking to put their money to work for longer periods of time and get compounded returns. So the advent of longer holding private equity, or to use real estate terms, core private equity, if you will, I think is becoming a big trend. I think there are a number of investors who are taking advantage of that now on a risk-adjusted basis and on a relative basis to what one can get in public markets, being able to deploy capital, let it compound and build over time, that allows a wonderful asset liability matching. Two is the notion of investing in real assets. I think infrastructure and other natural resource strategies will continue to grow in time. I think limited partners believed prior to the global financial crisis that a number of the positions that they had in their portfolio were a lot less correlated than they actually wound up being. And investors believe that real asset strategies provide them with less correlated return, and they're looking to take advantage of that non-correlation. They also believe in a resource-constrained world, real asset type of strategies create opportunity. The third thing is private credit. The amount of private credit funds and strategies and opportunistic credit type of strategies have proliferated. I think that's a direct result of lower returns in fixed income. What one experiences in credit markets is that there are periods of dislocation. Those dislocations happen quickly. Limited partners need to be organized in a way and have capital deployed to take advantage of those dislocations when they happen.
Mike, thanks for sharing your thoughts on trends in the fundraising space. And to our listeners, thank you for joining us on Carlyle ValueCast.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us. For more information, go to our website at www.carlisle.com. This has been a Carlisle ValueCast podcast.